Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today we're jumping back into the world of independent sci-fi action thrillers. And today we're talking about a new movie called Occupation from Saban Films. And with me today as my guest is writer and director Luke Spark. Welcome to the show, Luke.
Hello, how are you?
Pretty good. Now, this was a really fun film. Can you tell me how it came to be that you were the one that created this action adventure science fiction cornucopia of fun?
Well, it was always meant to be fun, so I'm glad you had fun. I've always had this idea in the back of my head. Obviously, I grew up in the 1980s, so I got to live through some of the best movies ever made, and I'm a huge fan of the genre. So when I was in LA in 2016 after my first film, I was pitching a bunch of projects, all of them very high concept and very, very big budget. And the people said, I love it, but what else do you have? And I didn't actually have anything, but I had this idea since I was a kid of looking across my small country town, seeing lights in the distance, and just thinking, what if this was an alien invasion without any warning, and how would I react, and how would my townspeople react? So I kind of pitched that to them as an Independence Day smash with Red Dawn, and they liked it, and they said, where's the script? And I said, I'll go get that script for you. And my producer literally walked out with me and said, what's this movie? What's happening? What are we doing now? And I said, it's okay. We'll get it done. And on the plane on the way back from LA, I'd already worked out the outline. And 8 months later, we were shooting. So it was a hugely quick turnaround movie.
I think it's awesome that you used that comparison. It's Red Dawn with Independence Day, because that's exactly how I described it to somebody else today. And he said, hey, that sounds pretty good. I want to see that.
Yeah, well, I always loved the story of James Cameron going into Titanic and saying, yeah, Romeo and Juliet get dumped. So I always try to use two comparisons like that.
So how long did it actually take you to write this and come up with which characters you wanted to follow, how you wanted to structure this story?
Yeah, I think just because, filmmaking and genre films are in my DNA so much, it all just fell into place for me. In my mind, I just kind of just saw exactly what needed to happen. So I wanted to just have 10 to 12, eclectic sort of characters that represent different values or different, lifestyles, but still being the very normal sort of person and throw them all together. So I just set out to sort of pick the 10 best that I could come up with that I know to around in a small country town in Australia or just the world. And then it was just a case of casting the actors and making sure that they could work together and really be open and collaborative to really let them become that character and really sort of develop it with me rather than me cramming my dialogue down their throat. I left it open and let them choose to interpret it and left it to bit of ad-libbing and that, so I think it all sort of came together and became a bit more real.
Yeah, the sections where everyone is learning how to work together, how to live together, and then training how to fight together when they realize this isn't a quick thing, this is going to be long drawn out, those sequences were actually very engaging and had me personally connecting with some of the characters, becoming more interested in them.
Yeah, it was something that I really wanted to kind of have two bites of the cherry. We've seen a lot of invasion movies a whole movie kind of about how to work out how to defeat them completely, and then seeing other ones that start years after a zombie apocalypse or something. I really wanted to have both bites of the cherry. So I wanted to have the initial invasion, but then I always wanted to have a sort of montage-y sequence that takes us through to like months later and see that world and how the characters are surviving and how they get from A to B. So there's one thing I set out to do straight away.
The training sessions led very, very nicely into the hit-and-run attacks, and they echo the attacks that we see our heroes in Red Dawn do so well. And I, as a throwback to someone who grew up on movies in the 80s and the 90s, I really like that. But with the special effects, the effects for the aliens, how much of that was practical and how much of that was CGI?
Well, I made a conscious decision early on to do all the aliens on the ground practically. There's an over-reliance on CGI. Sometimes it works. Obviously, if you have, you know, $200 million, but our budget's probably what they spent on catering of Independence Day. So I had to really come up with an idea of how to achieve it right. So we made the decision to do sort of the 1980s Stormtrooper-esque sort of real people in suits. And then when you take off the helmet, again, we went practically, and I really wanted to be not monsters, but just another civilization that has something for their own reasons, which, you know, leads into some moral choices throughout the film. And then obviously all the spaceships and that were CGI, but we really made sure we worked and gave a lot of time to our guys to give it, to make it sure that it stood up to standards and not look, you know, low budget.
Yeah, some of the storylines involving how they get involved with some of the aliens that they've either captured or encountered was very interesting. You kind of see what the aliens want, which is the planet, but the it's never clear until the very end what the aliens' end game was. That intentional to sort of leave that as a mystery until like the climax?
Yeah, it was. There was like a number of drafts of the script where, you know, it all sort of is laid out clear, but I tried to, you know, we ended up keeping it a bit more sort of ambiguous because, you know, me down here in Australia and you in America, I just felt like, you know, why ordinary people just suddenly know everything about why they're here and what's happening? You wouldn't really know. It's just, I try to keep it, you know, grounded and just, you know, they're just trying to survive. Half the most of the movie is just, you know, us following these characters to survive. It's only when they kind of get a bit of glimpse behind the curtain where them and us go, oh, okay, well, yeah, that's a bit interesting.
Some of the special effects of the attack, the big attack towards the end, were really, really compelling, especially when you had helicopters fighting the alien fighters instead of fighter jets. How did that come across? And I'm going to say right now, I saw your name in the credits as one of the helicopter pilots. So I'm like, oh, he wants to fly.
Yeah, there's a cameo of me in there. I have to get myself in there somewhere. It was funny because that stuff wasn't even in the script, the helicopters. It wasn't. Luckily, we had a great sales agent in America come on board and sort of helped me, you know, make sure it was okay for buyers and around the world. And that he was actually at the Cannes Film Market while we were shooting it. And he said, he rang me up one day and said, you know, I got lots of people that like the script, they really want to buy it, but they just thought the climax wasn't big. Can you go big? And I only had a limited budget. So I said, I'll come up with something. And yeah, and while we were shooting, I just sort of was scribbling notes on my scripts as we were going and just sort of taking control of the crew and saying, okay, we're just going to film all this crazy stuff and I'll fix it all and we'll bring in helicopters and then we'll do all this stuff. So it was just kind of really flying by the seat of our pants there on the last couple of weeks to make the attack as big as we can. It's my favorite sequence of the whole film. I just, there's something about it. I just really love seeing helicopters fight aliens. I just like it.
As a big fan of Airwolf, I approve. I really do. So what,
right.
Yeah, what is next for you in terms of your next big project? Because this looks like you had a lot of fun with it, and I would like to see more sci-fi from you.
Yeah, well, the next project is actually Occupation 2. I have had so much fun and served my cast that I've been developing that script since November last year, and we actually start pre-production next week and film end of August through to October. So it's sort of, I got eyes now on this becoming the franchise idea for Australia and expanding on the world of Occupation as global and how the rest of the world's going with it. So yeah, I'm very excited in that. It's actually, the sequel is actually probably the most exciting project I've ever done. So I'm hugely excited. Apart from that, I've got a massive TV show separate to Occupation that I'm in the middle of getting greenlit with America. So That's huge, and I can't wait for that one as well.
Wow, I'm happy to hear that there's a sequel. Any plans for expanding into like say graphic novels to sort of fill in some story holes here and there, like prequels and in between the movies?
Absolutely, I love all that stuff. Again, just being a huge genre fan myself, I love things like The Matrix, how they sort of expanded on that with the Animatrix and graphic novels and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted to get a little graphic novel out in time for the release of this film, but being crazy enough to do all this this big film myself is had to fall by the wayside. But I want to pick it up and definitely fill in the gaps between now and when Occupation 2 comes out, of a bit of backstory on the aliens and other countries and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, there'll be a lot more of the Occupation world.
Excellent. Without going into any spoilers, how many sort of film chapters do you see this story running?
Well, I'm focused on the sequel, but, obviously being fans of, Star Wars and that, if people think about it, you probably know that once you go two, there's really interesting to go three to make a trilogy out of it. So let's just say that.
Okay. I can live with that. If we have an Occupation trilogy, I'd be happy with that, especially if the characters, or at least most of the characters, survive.
Well, without giving spoilers away, some of the cast are coming back, obviously, but you'll have to see the movie to see which ones may come back and which ones may not. And then we've got a whole bunch of new characters that come into the sequel as well. But it's definitely a continuation. I can say the sequel takes place a year and a bit later. And what really interests me was, what's that world look like now that the Earth's under occupation? What does that world feel like? And that's what really sort of got me getting into the sequel. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, without going into any spoilers, the development at the end of the first movie, where there's an exchange of information, shall we say, that has me intrigued, and I'm super happy to know that there's a sequel coming along post haste. So thank you for that.
No, that's okay. I'm just as excited to tell the story as people are watching it, I think. So that's good. That's when everyone can have lots of fun together.
The movie is Occupation from Saban Films. It's in theaters on digital and VOD on July 20th. Go check it out. Writer-director Luke Spark, thank you so much for your time today and for this fun sci-fi thriller.
No, thank you. I've been coming to your website a lot, so it's great to talk to one of you guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me now we have Dan Ewing, the lead actor in Saban Films' new sci-fi action thriller, Occupation. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Summer. And I'm sitting here in Sydney, Australia, talking to you in winter, and so your name has brought a smile and a bit of sunshine to my face first thing this morning.
Awesome. Well, I have to tell you, I really enjoyed Occupation, being a sci-fi fan and an action fan. Having both in the same movie saves me time. So you play Matt Simmons, the town hero and the lead of the ragtag group of survivors. Tell us about Matt.
Well, I think he kind of was the town hero. I think in earlier drafts, he was a bit more sort of Captain America, a little bit more of a natural. And you've seen the film. We don't want to give too much away, but I think the aliens are the least of Matt's problems. He's a sort of former football star struggling with sort of addictions to alcohol, antidepressants, and probably any manner of other things. So he's had a bit of a fall from grace. And the story behind that was, I just done a rugby movie, and a lot of the ex-players, they're going through a lot of stuff, these modern-day gladiators, and they were sort of lovely enough to share their time with me and share their stories. So I spoke to Luke, our writer-director on Occupation, and he was lovely enough to put some of that stuff in there for me, and it just added just a completely another dimension to Matt that I'm sure you guys are going to love.
Now, had you had much rugby experience before this movie? Because it looked like you guys were having some fun out there.
Well, the sport in occupation is AFL, which is slightly different. It's a bit more sort of it's a bit more of a kicking game as opposed to the cliche sort of rugby that you guys might have seen us play. It's still a very physical game. It's a bit more of a mix between rugby and basketball, so to say. I haven't played a lot of AFL, but I certainly have played a lot of rugby. It's kind of our game down here. But I'm mostly a basketball player. And that's sort of a very fast growing sport down here. And given all our NBA players over there now, so not so much AFL, but yeah, certainly more basketball.
Well, as people who will eventually go see the movie know, the main attraction game for this small town is a big draw, and it gets interrupted by some very rude aliens from outer space, and. really, I know. They sort of change the very face of the world. Talk about how you approached Matt's adaptation to this, literally, just the world ending.
Well, that's a great question, and I think a lot of small town America, and don't get me wrong, a lot of big cities can. Oh, and sorry, big cities will enjoy this, but there's something about when a small town gets attacked, and it's very real. It's people that, you know, small town America are gonna know. So it's your local sort of football star, or your local sort of farmer, local nurse, local lawyer, local radio host, are all having to sort of band together. I think some of the bigger ones, you know, London or LA or New York gets wiped out, and then there's a quick joke, and we move on. So for me, it was quite easy because it was such a tight knit cast and the characters were so three dimensional and it was a great ensemble that it was it was quite easy to react in a very 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 real manner. And I'm from a small town in Australia also, so it's very easy to sort of put myself in Matt's shoes. And then there's flight, fight or freeze. And I think Matt is just as much stuff as he has going on with all the demons he's fighting. He just wants to. It just wants to take care of his fiance and his fiance's family and, of course, his teammates. So I think that's the natural leader starts coming out when the proverbial hits the fan straight away. Don't get me wrong, he doesn't quite get it together at the start of the film, but I love his natural reaction just to save his fiance and to take care of his mates. It's a very Australian thing to do.
Yeah, the change in him where he realizes that a lot of people are looking to him to help keep them alive. It takes him a while to catch on, but he does. And for me, the fun was watching you interacting with Tamara Morrison and Charles Majeur, because those are some some alpha males there.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. I've said that in a previous interview. That was actually one of my favorite little story arcs. It wasn't actually there on the page. To tell the story quickly, Charles Majeur actually came in late. There was another actor attached, but that then became not available. And it was a much smaller actor. It was going to be kind of quirky little old man in the town, little crazy mango farmer. Charles Majeur walks in, and he's 6'3". That is his voice. And you know, this is the beast. Off magicians, this is this is Blackbeard, or I think my mum had a bit of a crush on him when he did Revenge. That's, shout out to mum. And then obviously Tamura is he needs no introduction. He's a small dude, but his presence is amazing. And there's this great old bull young bull thing that we had going. It was a really great, and it was just a non-ageist thing, and it's a really great dimension to the script. And when we put the new stuff in with Matt being a bit more unreliable with his addictions, that obviously they keep popping up through the film. His demons keep popping up through the film. It's great to have those guys there because it really is like a team. You know, we are so imperfectly perfect as humans. You know, we've all got our demons, and it was just great to play that. It was very real. I thought there was no sort of cliche comic booky. You know, I'm the hero from minute one to minute 120. You know, it was such a great dynamic, and I'm so glad you mentioned it.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a nice touch, and to learn that added afterwards because of an acting change is even more impressive, because the whole little time jump, you see where people have adjusted to new roles and they are actually, you know, they start to mesh to work together, and they don't even question the roles, the paths they're on.
Well, Summer, I got to say, I hope they do a director's cut, because they do flesh out those relationships a bit more. But just time and pacing, you know. There's a sort of scene where Arnold's giving me tactical information. I've got my little notepad, and you know, there's a much longer scene there, and then Kimura comes in and we all chat. Like, I think just for you, maybe we need to send you the those things. What is, anything with those three lads, we'll send them to you for your special viewing, you know?
Awesome.
We'll send it over right now.
Oh, I should have asked about that when I talked to Luke. You guys definitely need to do like a director's commentary for the DVD, for the Blu-ray.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, it's just one of those things. I mean, I think it's just nice that, like, you hear so much about these big Hollywood shoots that have to go in and do reshoots. It's like we have to leave so much stuff on the cutting room floor because the characters were so sort of fleshed out. And that's not knocking the big Hollywood shoots, but I was touched. I was like, what, you like, he was, Luke was having sleepless nights because he had to leave these scenes that he loved. But it's just pacing, you know, pacing, and you know, you've got to have your tight cinematic package, you know. And it's great, you and I love those scenes, but you know, some people want to get this stuff moved along and get to the next thing, and it's an agonizing thing being in that edit room, from what Luke's told me. So but I'm so glad you mentioned that little storyline. That's great.
Yeah. So Luke already spilled the beans that a sequel has been greenlit. Is there anything from this first movie that you're looking forward to carrying on?
Another great question. Summer, you're amazing. Look, for me, I think the Matt's, I never want Matt to get it all together. There are certainly really great heroic moments in this film, as people will see that Matt sort of comes to, and he sort of picks up that mantle, as we all know he could and should. But it's we pick up the story 2 years down the track, and I don't think people should expect the hero they see towards the end of season one of occupation one. I'll say that. So I'm very much looking forward to carrying through Matt's demons and his struggles, because I think that's just humanity. He won't be Captain America in Occupation 2, which is fantastic. I'm really looking forward to exploring that in even more depth.
Nice, because I'm very curious to see how that charge at the end of the first movie, what that leads to, because that whole scene, the way it was laid out and crafted with, even with the flag, I was like, huh, that reminds me of the scene at the end of Glory where the regiment is charging up the hill into the fort. Yeah.
Well, I think Luke, you know, obviously we're all Australian. I think you don't really see us. We see a lot of American flags in the great American movies. So I think Luke wanted to do a little homage to, you know, the cool little Aussie sci-fi film that's making waves around the world. So he put the Aussie flag in, and you know what I mean? It's and it was cool. I think the way we did it, it wasn't quite on the nose. I mean, I think in every Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man ends up in front of an American flag. You know, it doesn't. And I'm with one of the 9 Spider-Man movies that have been made in 10 years. I don't know, but it seems like you always see that. And I think it was a cool little moment. And a big shout out to the bloke who had to carry that flag up that hill, because I tell you, that was real rubble. It was pretty dicey on the footwork. So I think one of our stunt guys, he was very, very much more coordinated than me, got that job, and he did it really well.
So other than playing with alien rifles, where can people find you online to keep up with your other adventures?
Other adventures? Well, I think the best way is just to jump on my Instagram page. So it's @_DanEwing. It's the same thing to my Twitter. You'll always see me sort of most of my tweets are either about my girlfriend, my little boy, basketball, or my sort of funny film adventures and all that sort of stuff. So, and again, just thank you so much, Summer, and to all your people out there. And I know US audiences are going to really dig it. And I hope you guys enjoy Occupation, that's for sure.
Well, I did enjoy it, and I'm hoping that my listeners will also enjoy it, because I'm always on the lookout for a good science fiction movie, and anything that has an action through line is also a lot of fun. And this one just popped up, and when I saw it, it was a lot of fun from beginning to end, and I am eager to encourage other people to check it out as well.
Summer, you're the best, and it's not, as you'll attest, this ain't just your normal color and movement, you know. So there's a lot of heart in this. Your audience is going to know, your listeners are going to know people in this film. You're going to know your local farmer, your local radio host, local podcaster. There you go. So it's great, you know. We're very, very humbled and very proud that people in the know like you are enjoying it so much, and we're really excited to share it with America now. So enjoy.
I will, and also enjoy yourself making the sequel, and I can't wait to get a hold of that as well.
Summer, you're the best, 100%. We're looking forward to making you proud again.
Awesome. That's Dan Ewing, who plays the lead Matt Simmons in Sabin Films' new action sci-fi thriller, Occupation, available in theaters, video on demand, and digital on July 20th. Check it out. And again, Dan, thank you for your time today.
No worries, guys. Thank you so much, Summer.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care. I told that devil
to take you back. Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
This is Stephen Kilpatrick, host of Tales to Terrify, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And yes, there will be a review, a full review of the movie Occupation on sliceofscifi.com later on in the next week. And it is worth checking out. It's not your typical indie sci-fi feature, but it is. But it's fun. It's a lot of fun. The ulterior motive of the aliens is one we've seen before, but there's a twist to it, which I'm not going to go into, and a few little teasers that might lead to why the story is conducive to a sequel or two. I enjoyed it. Trust me when I tell you, I've seen many, many other sci-fi features, low budget, that were terrible. And this is not one of them. This is definitely not one of them. I enjoyed this. The acting was a little melodramatic in spots, but, you know, you're dealing with people still coping with the end of the civilization that they've known and trying to figure out their spot in a new world, what they think that spot should be, or what they want to determine what that spot should be. So yeah, I guess a little melodrama isn't such a bad thing. If you haven't seen them, there are a few more TV reviews on the site. Did a 5 episodes in review for NBC's Reverie and for Freeform's Cloak and Dagger, both of which are excellent shows that you should be keeping an eye out for. If you liked The Gifted on Fox last fall, you should definitely be checking out Cloak and Dagger. And as I said in my review, Cloak and Dagger kind of ties in to the Netflix series, but not directly. And it is a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge towards Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. Roxxon Corporation gets around. Let's just leave it at that. As for other shows I'm checking out, and we all should be checking out, Humans on AMC. I'm not sure if that just ended or if there's one more episode to go. I need to check that really soon because I need to binge the past 2 weeks because I missed those. And also we have, starting on July 20th, actually, on July 20th, we have new seasons of both Winona Earp and Killjoy starting up. So you know I'm going to be glued to the television on Friday night watching Sci-Fi Channel because I love those shows. And yeah, I also have no life. So we'll just leave it at I love those shows. I've seen some news about Midnight Texas being in production for their upcoming second season, which is really good news. Looking forward to that one. I think in October is when they announced that that would be coming back. And what else is coming back in July or August? I'm drawing a blank. Uh-oh. I will figure it out and mention it next week then. But if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can send me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, on Krypton Radio. And yes, people, the Google Play link works now. So you can find Slice of Sci-Fi on Google Play. Google Play Music, I think, is what it is. I don't know if everybody's been switched over to Google Podcasts or if Google Podcasts is part of Google Play Music or... Yeah, either way, there's a Google Play link there. If you're a Android user, you can now find Slice of Sci-Fi there. If you're listening on iTunes or on Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let people know that you are enjoying the show. And leave a suggestion that maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can follow us on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, the website, the crowning jewel of all this geekery, sliceofsci-fi.com. We also have writersafterdark.com for author interviews, comic writers interviews. Hopefully we'll eventually get a couple of screenwriters over there to talk about writing the stories that we can't seem to get enough of. And maybe learn a little bit about how to tell a story along the way so we can actually tell our own. So there's that bit of entertainment for you. I'd like to thank everyone who is supporting us in these efforts on the web that we are endeavoring to provide, both the website, the reviews, the news, the podcasts. All of it is supported by your patronage. Your donations, your pledges actually support everything we do here. If you'd like to also add your support, you can check out our Patreon page over at patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you just want to make a one-time donation every now and then, there is a paypal.me link in the show notes. I'd also like to send my eternal thanks to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for providing the musical interlude, the themes, and the interstitial snippets that adorn this program. If you like your rock and roll with a geeky flavor, you can check out more music by them over at sci-fried.com. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.